Okay, this hour, as we continue talking with Lynn McTaggart about the power of eight, we'll also take your phone calls as well. Perhaps you've done some kind of intention experiment on your own. Share that with us, too, when we come right back. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, Lynn McTaggart with us. Lynn, you were talking about the participants in the Luke experiment, and you were mentioning a lady. I'll let you pick that story up.
Andy. Now, Andy hadn't had any intentions work. She was trying everything. Andy had been recently divorced, and she'd sold her gift store, and so she didn't have regular income, and things were getting a little precarious. And so her group, you know, she was meeting with them every week, and they were intending for her, and she was intending for herself, and just nothing was happening for her. So with her and a number of others, where it wasn't working, I finally said to them, get off of yourself. Stop intending for yourself and start intending for someone else. And so she started focusing on Luke. And the very next week, she gets a call out of nowhere offering her her dream job. And a very similar situation happened to a woman called Lisa, who was trying to write a book. She's a bodywork specialist, and she wanted to write a book about a discovery she made that about how to heal trauma victims. But she had never written a book before, and she wasn't getting anywhere. She'd worked her way through two editors, and they hadn't been helping at all. Didn't know what to do. None of the intentions working for her. So I tell her also, get off of yourself. She starts focusing on someone else, and lo and behold, the very next week, she gets this uncontrollable urge to walk into a store, even though she didn't need anything at that store, and she sees a woman who's an acquaintance she knows of. But as they start chatting and she says hello, the person turns out to be a book coach who was a former publisher, and she coaches Lisa through the entire process. Ultimately, the book gets published, and it becomes a number one Amazon bestseller. So it was amazing to me to watch this over and over again when people, and this is the big power here, when people get off of themselves and start intending for someone else, miracles happen in their own lives. This is the mirror effect I'm talking about, and this is the mirror effect that goes on in the big experiments, too. You get off of yourself, there's a huge rebound effect, positive rebound effect that comes back to you.
What has surprised you, if anything, about this?
Pretty much everything, George. I think what really surprised me was the amazing transformational effects that happened when people were doing the big intention experiments. That shocked me. It shocked me to hear about things that were absolutely the same as a mystical state. You know, I looked at some of the work of people like Abraham Maslow, who did his hierarchy of needs and all this stuff, and studied these peak experiences, as he called them, mystical states. And I looked at the work of some other people too, and they said that when you go through a mystical state, you have this physical change, you know, like a feeling of some sort of real change, like energy, a lot of energy, you know, going through you. And you have this incredible feeling of oneness and connection with the universe. You feel connected to other people. You have some sort of blinding epiphany of meaning, like it all finally makes sense to you. The world makes sense to you. And you also have this rejuvenation, as they call it. You know, things change in your life and things get better and you feel hugely better about yourself. Well, my people going through those intention experiments experienced every single one of those things. And the idea that they were having an altered state when they were sitting in front of their individual computer, you know, they were having this mystical experience, just participating in this experiment on their own, yet connected to these tens of thousands of people around the world, you know, virtually, was mind-boggling to me. And I didn't believe it. I mean, I was feeling the energy when I was doing them. It felt almost unbearable sometimes, like this energy coming off of my computer, and I totally dismissed it. I said, yeah, I'm just projecting this. This cannot be happening. But the surveys coming back from my people, and I didn't solicit this information was showing over and over again the same thing. Big transformations in their lives that almost were more important and more significant than our effects on the targets.
What do you think is driving it? What's the fuel for making these things happen? The individuals collectively? Is there a God factor? What do you think's happening?
Wow, George, it's a bit of everything. You know, that's been the big question I've been asking myself, and it's been, you know, what really drove this whole investigation and finally made me write this book about it. I think that there's a big piece in altruism. You know, altruism, when you start looking at studies of altruism and prayer, it's really interesting because, for instance, there was a study on prayer that was done by a psychologist who's also a priest, and he wanted to know whether or not prayer can heal people with some sort of mental illness. So he decided to see whether or not it could work on depression. So he gathered together about 400 volunteers, all of whom were depressed, and he put them into two groups. And one group were the people getting prayed for, and the other group were the people doing the praying. And after he calculated the results, the people who'd got prayed for did well. They were improving. But the people who had done the praying, they were doing spectacularly. And so he had to conclude that praying for someone, doing the giving, is better than the receiving. And when you start looking at all of the material and the studies, as I have, about the power of altruism, it's like a bulletproof vest, George. People who are doing any kind of altruistic activity like this are healthier, they live longer, they are happier. Even if they have the same illness and they're helping someone else, they do better. And it's really interesting to me. So I think there's a big piece. And as I talked about earlier in the show about the vagus nerve, when you fire that nerve, when you are doing for someone else and caring for someone, it has an ongoing effect on your immune system and really starts improving things. So I think altruism is a big piece of it. And I think the other piece is the power of the group. You know, we're so alone. We are so alone these days. And people usually connect with other people at work or neighbors. You know, it's a transaction that you have to carry out. But imagine if you've got a group of 8 strangers. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, when I'm running these virtual groups, you know, on my teleseminars and things, my people have never met. The people in my year-long masterclass have never physically met, and yet they are their intention family. They're closer than their own relatives. And here you've got a group of strangers essentially praying for you. I mean, that is so powerful. Knowing somebody like that always has your back.
Can one person screw it up out of the 8, let's say, if they don't believe it or, you know, they're just not with the program?
No, I don't think that having a lack of belief, one, will taint the whole power of the 7, but it might, you know, change the mood of the group. And so I have encouraged groups where a member is disruptive to ask that person to leave. You know, if the person isn't willing to go along with what they're doing, then I think they should go. But, it's, you know, there doesn't have to be complete congruence in everybody believing. You know, as I say, we've had a lot of people were skeptical. I mean, my the one I told you about, Lisa, who wrote the best-selling book, very skeptical. She came to this whole thing saying, this isn't going to work for me.
Right.
And she said she'd go in like a naughty child every time a group met every week on Skype. She'd go in like a naughty child, sort of not wanting to settle down and do the group intention. And they would start doing it, and she said it was really interesting. It was like the group experience got me down to this completely altered state. And she said it was like a soup that changed my brain. And I loved that because that's what a lot of people talk about, this power of the collective coming together and doing this little intention together, whether they're, you know, in a church group or a book group or in the office or a neighborhood or over the internet or on Skype. You know, there's that kind of coming together, the group effect. One of my other people, Patty, who healed 15-year chronic fatigue. I mean, she couldn't exercise for more than 5 minutes. Now she's hiking. And she was really struggling. And so with her group, she asked them to set an intention, and she did it herself, to find the cause of this chronic fatigue. And she said it was really powerful because it was like a vow I made to the universe. Because she had said it publicly to this group, that really was like the wind behind her, getting behind finding out why it was. And she did. She found out she had black mold in her house right behind where her dressing room was, and some other reasons, of some other physical things with happening with her liver, and she sorted them, and she's completely fine now.
It's remarkable how it works. It really is.
It is really an amazing thing. You know, George, I've asked every possible question from this, was this a prayer effect? Is this a group effect? Is this altruism effect? And, you know, I had to conclude that it's all of those things, and yet there's another little X factor here. And for an investigator like me, this was a hard journey because I had to really say, you know, I kept asking through all of these years, you know, did we do this? Well, let's see, let's look at the evidence, and, you know, very fact-based reporter. And I finally had to come to the, you know, I'm not sure I care why this works. What I really know is it works, and I've become a kind of, you know, going from a kind of doubting Thomas, I've come to be a kind of reluctant apostle of the miracle of small groups.
Back to the phones now. Joe in Long Island, New York, to get us started. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, Len. How you doing?
Hi.
Yeah, I have a brief story that with the power of intention that's interesting. I had worked on basically disputes for the taxi cab industry, and it was for a company that insured most of the taxi cabs at the time in Manhattan. Now, I did this for several years. I was somewhat overwhelmed with the volume of work and what they gave me, so I used to pray myself almost like every day briefly that there would be less accidents and of these cabs, mm-hmm. hoping that I would get less work, you know, because a lot of this work funneled to me, you know, on certain like major disputes. Mm-hmm. So I never really knew what the effect of these prayers were. You know, I'd stop at St. Patrick's Cathedral and, you know, pretty regularly. And so after I left, I kind of told people that I did this because I was kind of overwhelmed with the volume of the job. And then like 2 or 3 years later, someone showed me an article charting the accident rates of the cabs in New York. Now, as soon as I left, the accident rate jumped like 25% and stayed at 25% higher. So it was almost like an exact line. So it seemed like it was at a much lower rate while I was saying the prayers. And then when I left the industry, I stopped praying because I no longer needed less volume of work.
And they went up, and they went up. You're breaking up a little bit there, Joe, but Lynn, it does work.
That's a great thing. You know, Joe, that's such a great story. And, you know, as you say, well, did I do this? You know, who cares? You know, something happened. And I think it's so powerful for people to try this themselves. I ask my groups all the time to try these little experiments themselves. In a group, I'd be really interested to see what would happen to that taxi cab industry if you had a little group of eight to do it. But that's so interesting. I've had my people do things for trying to get more rain, of simple experiments, trying to grow more grow seeds and make them grow higher and create a little set of controls, or even change water pH. You can do that easily. But when you start seeing effects like this, it becomes very compelling.
Well, it sure does. And, you know, were there any surprises for you in any of these experiments at all?
They were all a surprise. to be honest. I mean, I think the first peace experiment was really mind-boggling for me because in 2008, George, we decided to do our first one, and I was looking for a war, first of all, that no one was thinking about in the West, because I didn't want it to be muddied up by, you know, other people's prayers, essentially. I was trying to do an experiment. But I also was looking for something. I was working with scientists who said I needed 2 years' worth of injuries and deaths, weekly deaths and injuries, from 2 years before and the ability to get it for a couple months afterward, because we wanted to really measure over time whether or not there was a certain kind of trend and whether or not we could buck the trend, just like our caller Joe was talking about that trend. So, you know, I called all over the place. I even found there is a Jack Bauer type 24 anti-terrorist unit inside the State Department of the U.S. I know this. It has an unlisted number. It's, you know, it's a black organization, essentially, because I found it. And I asked them, when I found it, I said, do you have 2 years' worth of violence data on terrorist activity? And I forgot where I mentioned. Now, when you ask that of the government, the U.S. government, they take your Social Security number. So they did. They were very interested in me. But they didn't have, they wouldn't disclose any data. And this is the hard thing. It's hard to get any country to talk about the bodies. But I finally found Sri Lanka. And so we had all that data, and I had my scientific team, and we did our intention over 8 days, you know, just 10-minute windows over 8 days. And afterward, we measured the effect. And violence quadrupled when during our week. Now, I was terrified about that.
Oh, sure.
I thought, oh, my gosh, did we do this? And then it plummeted to well below the time before. But that isn't even the interesting part of the story. What was interesting is... about 3 months, that very week turned out to be pivotal in the whole 25 years of the war. The government won a couple of decisive battles that enabled them to recapture the North, which was held by the rebels a couple months later. And 5 months after that, this 25-year war that had been unwinnable from either side was over. So it ended in a bloody finish, but it was done. So, of course, we said to ourselves, you know, did we do that? And even my professor of statistics, who did all the work, looked at the fact that our intention, that the week that we had done our intention had been so pivotal in the whole course of the war, and said, all she could say was, weird, huh? And absolutely weird. So that really surprised me. But I have to say, George, that the biggest surprise of all has been the rebound effect on the people themselves, the transformation that happens when people are part of this.
Did it make them more enlightened or nicer people or what?
All of that. More enlightened in the sense that many of the people, let's just look at the Peace Intention Experiment of 2008, this Sri Lanka one. The people were something like 40% of people who had participated said their relationships in every regard were more peaceful. They were in love with everyone they came in contact with.
Interesting comment.
They were, as I say, they were hugging strangers. So that happened, but they also, loads of them, changed their life's purpose. A number of them quit their jobs or said, I'm not doing this boring job anymore. I'm setting up my own
company. Yeah, it changed them all. Lynn, we're going to come back in a moment and take final calls with you. The Power of Eight on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're back with Lynn McTaggart, the name of the book, The Power of Eight. And Lynn, it's available now, is it not?
Today. Today is the release date, George.
Perfect. Perfect timing. Amazon and bookstores?
Amazon and bookstores, absolutely.
Super. All right, to the calls we go. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hello, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. And a quick comment to you, George, after listening to your back-to-back interviews with Robert Gleason and Sally Quinn,
mm-hmm.
I was reminded that it would be fantastic if you had the opportunity to interview investigative reporter Seymour Hersh. And I don't know if you've ever considered that.
But I've been reading his books. He's great.
He is fantastic. He's getting up there in years,
yep.
But it would be a momentous interview.
Incredible reporter.
Incredible. Len, wow. You know, last time you were on Coast, Len, I ordered your audio seminars, Living the Field and Living with Intention. Mm-hmm. And in one part, you speak about retrocausality, retro-intention, retro-influencing, the idea that you can not only change the present intentionally, but you can also change and alter the past. And you suggest that time isn't Newtonian, past, present, and future, but perhaps time is one vast now, you know, all blurred together, mm-hmm. and that there really isn't a cause and effect, but that we are interacting on all levels, a quantum non-locality, but you're suggesting a retro non-locality. And you also gave some experiments in your audio lectures, and I tried that. I had a neighbor that I yelled at. I literally screamed at her. She ran away, and I thought about that evening, and I listened to your lecture, and then I visualized very intently about the incident vanishing, literally not happening, as you suggested, retrocausality. And 2 days later, I ran into my neighbor, and she did not remember the incident at all. And since then, I've been practicing this with, like, my osteopath, the idea of retro-healing, going back to the very beginning of an illness and healing somebody at that time. Now, you cite a lot of research, Dean Radin, who's been interviewed on Coast, mm-hmm. Eleanor Gruber, etc., and the PEAR research. And I was wondering if your groups of eight are working with retro healing and changing the past, actually altering, making vanish, you know, incidents of the past.
That is such a great question, and what an interesting experiment that you did. I encourage everyone to do that, and I've been working with my groups on that too, particularly people who are stuck in something. And oftentimes what I'll tell them to do is go back to the seed moment, as one of the scientists called it, the seed moment where an illness started before it became a full-blown illness, or the seed moment when you first were told off about being bad at math and have thought that you're useless in math ever since, or the seed moment where you first had an argument and that caused estrangement. And I've found that that is such a powerful way of trying to do retro-intention. But I've also found, this is a really interesting thing about these groups, is oftentimes in setting an intention for someone else, certain elements of their past also get healed. So there is something so powerful. I mean, it's hard for us to get our brains around it because we do think of time as a forward-going arrow. But if we actually think of time, as you suggest, as one big now, and us being in one big here instead of being far away. You know, it didn't matter we were in Sydney and the seeds were in Tucson, Arizona. Then this all starts making sense. And as Robert John once said to me from PEAR research, take time out of it and it all makes sense. And so if you just think of it as, you know, one big, not a continuum, but one big now, this can work. So I really suggest that people do that because it certainly has worked for us.
When we did the intention experiment for Washington, D.C., it did lower crime, did it not?
33%, George. We measured it over time, and there was a drop of 33% of crime in the two counties we focused on, and that bucked the trend. Crime had been going up, but it also was different from property crime. We only focused on violent crime. Property crime continued to go up, but violent crime crashed by 33%.
Can this also be used in the wrong hands with evil?
Oh, totally, it can. You know, when you think of mass intention, think of World War II and Hitler, you know. But luckily, we don't have, you know, we don't have people who are that coordinated, as coordinated, usually. But it can be. But that's even more recognition and suggestion that we come together as a big group. I mean, that's one of the reasons to do this big peace intention experiment, is to show people the power of everyone coming together for a positive reason and how that radiates out in your life. And I wanted to say, George, I have to give a nod to Gaia, who you mentioned in one of your ads. Gaia is hosting this peace intention experiment, which is running over 6 days, and they have put their whole studios and everything and their filmmakers at my disposal to film these. They're the 6 half-hour episodes.
Great.
For free. This is a totally free event. You don't have to be a subscriber. You can just come on with AmericanIntentionExperiment.com. But they have filmed amazing stuff. We've got the scientists. We've filmed people who have been healed by these Power of Eight groups. We've filmed people who've healed by participating in the big experiments. And we even have our own Power of Eight groups. We just plucked out two groups from a local Unity church, Mile High Church, near Gaia's offices. And we did two experiments with them, and amazing results. You know, we have one guy, Wes, a Vietnam vet, who's been depressed. He was derailed by getting a low lottery number, and so he had to go into the Vietnam War in the last year of the war.
Almost happened to me.
Did it?
My
really?
Lottery number was 20, but they discovered a little heart murmur and kept me out, and it was years later before I was able to get back in, and I went in the Navy.
Wow.
And they couldn't find the heart murmur anymore.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? It was probably the power of intention, George.
Maybe it was. I'm not sure. I was, you know, it was in my last year of college.
Wow.
And I'm not sure I really wanted to go, but,
yeah,
you know, it's strange how things work out.
Well, Wes didn't want to go. He had planned to study science, and he was on a course, but he got a low lottery number, and so he had to go, and it derailed his life. He was in, you know, depressed, and he was struggling in every regard, had very, you know, just nothing was working. Even his wife, he met someone late in life, and she died of cancer. It was just tragic. So he got to a point of, what's the use? He participated in this little Power of Eight group we set up at the, you know, with the church and filmed by Gaia. And he woke up the next day. He was a sender. He wasn't even a receiver. And it was like suddenly life was joyful again. He had an amazing sort of epiphany, and you'll see him on there. He is just a changed person. And it was extraordinary to me just to watch people just plucked out of nowhere.
Yeah.
A perfect experiment to demonstrate what happened.
Let's go to Yolanda in Fountain Valley, California. Good morning, Yolanda.
Hi, George. I was on your show like 20 years ago. It was a miraculous healing that I have had.
That's right. There's only one Yolanda, that's for sure.
And anyway, I was listening to Lynn's, your show tonight, and I thought, oh, my Lord. I was diagnosed with cancer in 79. Since then, I've gotten these prayer meetings and these rosaries, and you know, just pray for people and pray for ourselves, and we have had the most miraculous, and there's always been eight of us, you know, and it's just been remarkable. And for one example, we had one member that had a grandson, and she didn't happen to come that day. And it was, I say, nothing is ever planned. It's always in God's hands. So she didn't come. And the little boy, her grandson, fell off a 2.5-story building, apartment, when he fell out of the window, was smashed. And she, She got a phone call from her daughter. She called us knowing that we were having this meeting, and we put him in the center of the circle, and he had a small cracked pelvic and something else, and we prayed and prayed, and within 2 weeks he was walking, and it changed all their lives, their daughter, their son, oldest son, you know, and he was 3 years old. And I see how it just, people become, you know, I said the power of prayer, you guys, it's so, and also it makes us, we do have to humble ourselves, and we do have to, you know, look at ourselves and say, you know, what's this? Now, my problem is I have a grandson who lost his girlfriend 2.5 years ago, and it was his first love, and she died in a terrible car crash, and he was texting her when the accident happened.
Oh, gosh.
And he has not been able to get over it, and it has got...
He thinks he's the reason, doesn't he?
And an anxiety, and it's just so bad. No, the dad was driving, and the mother and the brother and the daughter.
Oh.
And they were coming back from Vegas, and the dad fell asleep on the wheel and hit a truck, and it just killed them. And the only one living was the mother, because she was thrown before the truck. So my grandson is just, I can't even tell you what we've been going through, psychologists and therapists. And I put him in the circle, and we pray, you know. But it's like, he doesn't believe. He has no belief. And yet he knows I'm a miracle, and he knows the miracles that have happened in my life and in lives that we've touched, from removing demons from people in our room that have hip surgeries.
Well, let's ask Lynn this quick question, Yolanda, and that is, if it doesn't work, Lynn, why? Mm-hmm. Why? With such outstanding results, those that don't work, how do you explain that?
Okay. I can't really explain it, but what I can say is a possible solution to your grandson. I know he's not a believer. Ask him to participate in one of the prayer circles as a sender.
If he will.
If he will. Just ask him, just say, you know, look, bear with me on this, humor me. Just do this and see what happens to him. Let him get off of himself and send to someone else and see if that helps. That has helped so many people I have had who have been stuck. When the intentions aren't working for them, they focus on someone else and something miraculous happens. And as I say, this is, you know, it's as soon as you get your attention on someone else and do something altruistically, it's happens in your body, he's going to feel an uplift. It's just what physically happens to him, and that can help, but it's also something bigger than that. It's being part of something bigger and just getting off of yourself. And I've seen it over and over in the science. It's powerful.
Lynn, we have what we call the Friday prayers list, and people will write in for others or themselves to be prayed for various reasons, afflictions, you name it. Mm-hmm. And so they go on this list, which we don't publish, but on Fridays, people just take a little time, even though it could be eight people, and they pray. And I got to tell you, the results seem to be amazing when people email me back and there's, after they're on the list and the prayers have been done, they seem to have been cured or things are better for them. It's amazing.
It is amazing. The same thing happens with our intentions of the week that we do every week together and with the little groups. But here's the thing, you know, you don't need hundreds of thousands. You just need a little group of eight.
That's all.
But I've also seen this where, and the real interesting thing is, I mean, I tell a story in the book about a guy called George who had a glioma, you know, terminal brain cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now he kept going for prayer over and over again. He was following these charismatic churches. He was going for prayer and nothing. For years, nothing. He would just always line up, nothing happened. He started praying for other people, you know, because he was fascinated by watching some of the successes.
Right.
So he became one of the people praying for others, and suddenly his doctor started noticing the tumor was receding,
that
and
is
it
amazing.
Finally went.
Lynn, we're out of time. The websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com, including the American Intention Experiment.com, where you would like people to sign up to become part of that experiment. The name of the book, it's available now. It just came out, The Power of Eight. Thanks, Lynn. Appreciate it. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.